Hello, I'm Kirsty Rice, and welcome to the Two Fat Expats, the podcast about living a fat expat life. And we mean filling your life up to the brim so that it's overflowing with all the good stuff. Today, we're talking about heading home for the holidays. How do you manage to keep everyone happy? Do you get together with fellow expat orphans during the festive season? Or are you those people who are making a 24-hour trek back to visit five different groups of family in 24 hours? Once again, we've got loads of TV, podcasts, and social media recommendations for you this week. I'm coming out of the closet with my deep obsession with Oprah, and Nikki admits that she has a slight problem with murder mysteries. I'm on my way to Australia to see my eldest child before she takes off for a five-week exchange to France. And my fabulous serial expat co-host, Nikki Moffat, is in Hamburg, Germany. Let's go and say hi. Hello, Nikki Moffat. How are you?
Moin, moin, Kirsty Rice. How are you?
Those language lessons are paying off. Is that what you say, moin, moin?
My husband insisted, because he's worked for this company for years and they're based in Hamburg. And I'm like, that is not a German word. He says, yes, it is. It's a Hamburg-specific greeting. So good morgen is good morning, but moin is kind of like a Hamburg or Northern Germany, German way of saying hello / morning / whatever. But I go to the supermarket and I hear people say moin like it when it's dark outside in the night. So I don't know. Oh. I'm still trying to get to use it.
So is it just like a hi?
Yes. It's like a hi.
Yeah,
I think
instead of a hello, it's a quick, short hey or a hey, hey, hi, hey. Moin, moin. And do they say it twice?
Well, Sam says it twice. I don't know whether everyone says it twice. I hear a lot of people say it once, but I have heard people say it twice. So it's not totally unheard of to say it twice.
So tell me about your language classes. What does it involve?
Well, it's three times a week for 90 minutes. And I went to go to a trial one the other day and they were too far along. So I had to do a test, an online test, to see where my German is. Now, German's very specific, of course it is. And they have very structured levels of where you are. So you're an A1 learner or an A2 learner or a B1 learner or a B2 learner and all these specific levels. So I went along to the A2 class and and then I left and I said, I think I'd like to start an A1 class.
And so what else have you been doing?
I was almost inspired to write a blog post this week from my very old long
portfolio.
About the German public toilet experience. You pay to go to the toilet here, like public toilet.
Yeah, I think you do. Do you pay in France as well?
It's a European thing, I think. So a lot of places like have a lady standing there and there's like a little tip tray and you would put in a certain amount. Mm-hmm. But I was in a public shopping, like quite a big shopping center, and I needed to go to the bathroom. So I went up to where it pointed for me to go. And there was this, like, it was like a train station. There was this big bank of, like ticket vending machines with little turnstiles. So I went up and I put in my 50 euro cents and it spat out a ticket, and then I took my ticket because I didn't know if I had to use it, and I went around the corner and there was a very nice bathroom, and I walked past the bathrooms, and then there were a lot of stalls with, thank God I don't live in America anymore, no cracks between the door and the side of the stall. But and then Americans would say, but how do you know if there's anyone in the stall? Well, funny you should ask, Kirsty Rice. There is a green or red light on the outside of the closed door. So you know whether it's going to open or not.
So I need to go back a second. I need to understand the reference about the cracks in between the doors and America. Why America and Germany? Are you saying that in America there are cracks between the doors in the public toilets?
Yes. So the door, there's always a gap.
Yes.
Like it's like a, yes,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Yes.
I think in Australia we're the same, aren't we? There's always a gap.
Well, there's the one underneath, but I don't think there's a big gap on the side of the door.
Yeah, because it's always icky, isn't it? Because you know that people can see you sitting in the toilet. Yes.
Anyway, no such problem in Germany. And then it's all magic and it's all, you use your hands to wave, especially. And then as I turned around to make sure everything was okay, I saw the toilet seat lift and rotate and be cleaned. And I went, oh, I want to see that again. So I got out my phone and pressed video and then flushed again. And then the toilet seat rose up and did a full rotation and was cleaned. And I thought, wow, this is so amazing. And so then I went out to use the basins and wash my hands. And lo and behold, there was a TV in the mirror. So while I was washing my hands.
Wow, I've seen that. Now,
so can I tell you, yes. 50 cents gets you a lot of bathroom.
It does. Now, I've seen the TV in the mirror at the hairdressers in Paris because I went to do the old wash and blow dry in Paris. And
as you do.
Yeah, oh, it was the most amazing thing ever in my life. I think that whole hour, I had this incredible experience where I went to, and this is off topic a little bit, but I have to share. I got a weekend in Paris with my husband and no children, and he was there for a conference that was being held at a really lovely hotel. And when I say really lovely hotel, the hold up when I arrived was that the King of Spain was also arriving.
Oh,
so
dear.
It blocked off the street. So it was beautiful, but it was just, you know, one of those surreal kind of moments where you go, well, this really isn't my real life, but I might just pretend that this is my real life for the next hour or so.
Nice.
And you know, the whole experience of getting in the hotel room, and it's also Parisian, and you're looking out over the streets of Paris, and then you go down and you say to the concierge, you know, where would I find someone to get a wash and blow dry? And and he makes the phone call and arranges for you to go there, and then draws you a little map, and you know, it's like, oh yes, this is my everyday existence. Fantastic.
And there was a TV.
But there was a TV. I remember when, after she'd washed my hair, because you wear like a little lab coat when you go to the hairdressers, yeah, in Paris. And so she put this little lab coat on me, washed my hair. I sat down in front of the mirror and there was a TV. It was incredible coming out of them. And there's no, it's all flat and smooth, like the TV.
Yeah, look, it's part of the mirror.
Yeah.
It's like Harry Potter.
Yes. It is like Harry Potter. Okay, today we're going to talk about when holidays fall into the too hard basket. And the reason we were talking about this, Nikki, was for some it's Christmas, for some it's just a winter break, for some it's just, you know, celebrating the end of the year. And there's a lot of angst with this time of the year. As much as there is excitement, there's also angst about how Christmas or the end of the year looks with family. What do you do, Nikki? What do you do on your December break?
Well, it's actually really been strange. So it's really dependent on the country that we've lived in. So when we're in Hong Kong, it was quite easy to go home because it's close and it's the same time zone and the kids get a decent break from school. And we used to go home every second year. The first 2 years we went home both times, and then we realized that was just too much. So every other year, which we've done in every country we've lived in, we had like an orphans Christmas. So we would have people over and sort of like a potluck. So people bring things and then you just have a big lunch and drinks and just a relaxing afternoon. Because after all, friends are the family you choose for yourselves. So you spend Christmas with your family. And in South Africa, it was far, but it was Christmas and it was summer holidays. So we also went home every second year. And in the US, it was too short a break. So it was a 10-day break and we were on the other side of the US. So with time zone changes and travel times, it just wasn't relevant. So we used to go home in July, which was not as fun at all.
No, and that's the thing for those of us from the Southern Hemisphere, isn't it, is that you know, a lot of expats have this enormous break in the middle of the year. School usually stops around June, July and doesn't go back until August, September. And if you're in the Northern Hemisphere, that's fantastic because you have this enormous break and you go back to your families and it's summer and you swim and you holiday and everybody comes back and they're all brown as berries with their lovely summer wardrobe. And if you're Australian, you go back to winter and it's cold and it's wet, and the same in South Africa. It's cold, it's wet, you rug up, you drink a lot of red wine, you eat a lot of pies, you come back fat and white.
I can't even get my head around that it's nearly Christmas and you're heading off for Christmas.
I know.
My kids have 3 weeks, and I guess they'll have 3 weeks next year. So that's definitely next year. We'll be looking to go somewhere warm, either to Australia or somewhere warm.
And is there an element of that? Because we're about to go through some of the answers we got.
Yeah.
We asked people sort of on the Four Kids 20 Suitcases page. Well, I guess first of all, we asked if they felt guilty for not going. And I thought Catherine Fisher Headley had a really interesting insight into the fact that, you know, she really has no choice this Christmas because her husband is only getting sort of about 5 days off. So going back to the US, they're in the Middle East, just wasn't an option for them. So while they're all excited because they're going off to Italy and they're going to have like a quick ski break for those 5 days, she made a really good point that when December 20 comes around, it's her father's birthday and she's not going to be there. And she said on Christmas Day she knows that she'll be thinking about her parents at home alone because they don't have other family with them this year. And that is an awful feeling. And I know, you know, a lot of people have sort of said about that feeling on the actual day of that, you know, some you make the choice and you decide to live with the choice, but it's actually getting through that day. Like
well, that's why I like to have a lot of people around so I don't have to think about other things.
Yes.
As in I enjoy having people so I can focus on something. That's why I like to host as well. I'm very happy to go to someone else's house, which I have done in the past, but I'm also very happy to host because it just gives you so much more to focus on and I love people being around and so I just – and you spend the whole day doing that.
Yes.
You know, like it's just, and then the day's over and then it's done. Like in America, we never went. So we always had an orphan's Christmas and we had like trestle tables set up in our basement. We had like 30 people, 20 to 30 people most years.
Yes.
Come and have lunch and spend the day. And then we had open house in the afternoon for our neighbors in our ridiculous basement bar. So I just loved having the whole day completely chockers. So I didn't have to think about what I was kind of missing out on.
Yeah, and that phrase came up a lot. Like Nancy DeBroker said that, you know, she missed her family when she wasn't there, but she said, I find myself feeling anxious for it to all be over already. And you just used that phrase too. You said, you know, so I fill it up with people and then it's done and it's over. And I agree with you. I still say one of the best Christmases we've had was away from our family. We did a big, same thing, huge big group, fantastic day and lots and lots of giggles. But there still is, I still remember like making that phone call to my parents and seeing everybody on Skype and when that was done thinking, oh, well, you know, oh, well, we got through it, it's done. Which is a bizarre feeling, a bizarre way to feel about Christmas, isn't it?
I know, and also when you live in a different time zone, Christmas isn't the same day necessarily. So, like, you either have to stay up late or get up early and to try and even get a call in. And then when your family is travelling to somewhere else, like your family in another country, then trying to coordinate that. And oftentimes you're talking to them or Skyping with them and there's, like, they're somewhere where there's a lot of people and it's all very busy and just the day is always a little bit, it feels a little bit flat. Like it's exciting to talk to them, but it would, you know, it's just a, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a tough one.
Yeah. And what about the people who struggled with their in-laws? And I thought the interesting one was the people whose families didn't want you know, hadn't ever offered to come to them because, you know, that's the other option.
Yeah. And, well, that's the thing. Like, that's what I really thought about when I was looking at it. I was like, I never thought to ask and say to them, well, why don't you guys all come to us? You know, let's plan. Because my sister-in-law is a planner. She's a planner. She can probably tell you what she's doing in Christmas 2025 right now because she just like, she has all the family outlines. And that's not to say, like, she is a good, she's very organized. So she does all these things planned. I mean, they just visited us in the States in September. We weren't there, but they had a great trip because they had planned to come. And so, unfortunately, they didn't make it when we were still there. So I just never said, hey, guys, you know, you should all come here. But I thought it was very good of that. There was someone, Jody, wrote that the reason that they left for the expat world was over a Christmas family blue.
Yes. I did see that. I said to her, God, that must have been some blue.
Blue, of course, for those non-Australians listening, is a big family argument. Well, it's not a family argument, but it's just a large misunderstanding or disagreement. And they vowed they'd never go back for Christmas, and in 24 years they haven't. And if people want Christmas with them, they go to Dubai. I mean, I thought that was a good outcome.
Yeah.
Hilary Scott said, Christmas is a time for goodwill to all. So with that in mind, we avoid families, stress and worry, and leave town as soon as school finishes. They just said that the first year the conversation happened, and now it's understood that Christmas is, you know, their time, and everyone agrees, which I thought was kind of good.
I imagine this is unique to Australians and Kiwis and South Africans and whatever is, because Christmas for us is summer, there's a whole different feeling. And like, I know that because we, you know, we've always gone home in those winters and we missed a lot of Christmases. And then I remember that first summer that we were home, getting off the plane and going, oh, this is what Australia feels like. Do you know, this is it to me. This is exactly what Australia
Christmas
is.
Christmas of Australia. And Christmas is, I mean, apart from if you're not there and on the day, if you're there on the day, it can also be stressful. But Christmas is about, you know, everybody going home, spending time. Christmas is a really easy time to catch up with people.
Yes.
Because everyone's always around. Particularly you Adelaide people, you always go home at Christmas.
We do.
So if you go to Adelaide, you can see everyone. If you go to Adelaide in the middle of the year, like June and July, you know, people aren't there, or there's school holidays and they're away, or they, you know, they've got, you know, commitments, sporting commitments, all this kind of stuff. Whereas Christmas, everyone's kind of on a break from those things, from regular life, and this sort of time for catch-ups and relationships and being with other people is kind of available, and that, and you know, the sunshine and the warmth.
Yes. Yeah. But I find I get off the plane and there is that warmth, and Australia has a certain smell to it, and I don't know whether it's the eucalyptus or what it is, but there is something about that summer. And you know, Australians do casual summer, I think, better than anyone else in the world. You know, you get there and it's like shorts, T-shirts, relaxed, there's cricket on the telly, you have a beer at the end of the day, you spend your life down at the beach or on the river or something, you know, water-focused. There's a whole different Australia that happens in the summer.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, there's cricket, or there's, you know, the Sydney to Hobart, or there's tennis. You know, there's always a telly. Like you always walk in and there's a telly on, even if people aren't watching it.
Yes,
you can just stop in front of it and have a look, see what's going on, and then go back outside.
Yes,
someone say what's happening, and you can give an update.
Yeah. I loved Catherine Hoffman Beckerman. She said, we never go home for the holidays. Well, really ever. We've been back twice in 5 years. We told them when we left the States that it's just so much harder for us to fly with these three or four kids. And we use our home leave money to fly them all over for Christmas. And that's sort of what we were talking about before.
Yeah.
I'm really admire that, but I couldn't do that for our entire family. I couldn't.
Well, you would have to go somewhere and then all the other people would have to go. Yeah, that's a lot. I mean, that, and it's the same for us too. And that's nice that they can totally do that, because I've been to some cool places.
Yeah, they had been, hadn't they? Like France and Spain, Turkey, China, Japan. Yeah, the whole thing.
And then there were the people that use the beach house / holiday house like you guys do.
Yes.
But you don't use it for Christmas, do you? Like not everyone comes to you.
Yes, because our beach house is teensy tiny and it is a great sort of lock and leave place. But we don't, I guess having four children, we fill up a fair bit of space. We did invest in a camper van, you know, like one of those ones outside. We invested in one of those. And so we tend to do, like if families come down for a night to save them sort of driving home, we'll throw all the kids in the camper van so we've got some spare beds.
Claire Rubaroo, I'm going to say, and I'm sorry, Claire, if that's wrong, after 10 years of travelling back and forth from the Northern Hemisphere to family in Australia and racing around between Sydney and Melbourne, and that's something we do. We always have to go between states because we have family in different states too. They finally got smart and bought a holiday house on the coast. Now everyone can come to us. But so she said, but funny thing is we find we're still doing all the travelling. But this year her husband has put his foot down and said, no, come to us or see you another time.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, is that the difference between long-term expat and short-term expat? That maybe when you're – and I'd love to know how many people are nodding their heads out there at the moment, that when you first kick off in the expat world
– I think it's a lesson you learn.
You do. You kick off and you go home for that first break and you basically do not have a holiday. You spend the entire time flying from one person to the other because you've said you'll catch up with everyone. And you kind of get back and go, we didn't do anything that we wanted to do because we were so busy, you know, carting our kids and our people from one place to another. And yeah, is that it, that you eventually, because that's definitely what happened to us. We were very mobile around Australia for 10 years until we just said, right, we need to have a house. This, we can't keep doing this. We need to have one place where people can come to us and the kids can settle and they can feel like they've got their little piece of Australia. But it took, yeah, it took 10 years to get there.
Yeah, I think so. So Kelly Jackson Nash also bought a beach house in the 90s, she said, before she became an expat.
Clever Kelly. Yes.
But they also go down there and spend the time and say, you know where we are policy.
Yes.
And believe it or not, despite being a 75-minute drive away, we are not exactly inundated with family visitors. We have learned not to be heard about it. It is what it is. They do call in on their family on the way to the beach house and back to the airport. So they do they feel they do their bit. But they do spend Christmas days with their in-laws in the city. But otherwise from that, anyone can come visit, yeah, which is a nice way to look at it.
It is a nice way to look at it. People do get really hurt about their in-laws not coming, don't they? I don't. Greg's parents have never been to Qatar and neither of mine, actually. I'm saying that and I've just realised neither of mine. My parents have been everywhere that we've lived apart from here, and Greg's parents did whatever they could, you know, in between living their own life. But it's not something that I've ever been mortally wounded about, because I just think it's such an expense to have people come to you, and not everybody has that sort of money. And not everybody travels that well either.
So when you live in a place that people go through, like when you live in Hong Kong, you get a lot of visitors.
Yes.
Because people are going somewhere and they go, oh, well, I'll just go through Hong Kong and we'll stop for a few days or whatever, which is awesome. And then you move from Hong Kong to somewhere like South Africa, not a lot of people traveling through South Africa. So we went from this sort of like we would see people sort of really regularly and quite a lot, and then to like nothing.
I'll tell you who I wanted to do a special shout out to, and that was Nicola Atkinson, who told us that she mostly goes back to the UK, but this year they're off to Trinidad and Tobago for a posting.
Oh, yes, Nicola.
She's currently in the Netherlands, and she said their container should have arrived at Trinidad and Tobago this week. I want to wish her the best of luck with that, because I know I would be getting a little bit nervous. But she said she's hoping that by the time she gets there, hubby has had everything unpacked and set up the house. She's put a little smiley face in there. I'm gathering that means that she's not feeling truly confident about that happening.
The smiley face is one of the ones with the teeth bared.
Yeah.
So it's not really like a real smiley face. It's the teeth emoji.
And she said it'll be a mad dash around the supermarket for Christmas dinner, but if all else fails, they'll just have a barbecue. I love that attitude. That is true expat grit. You know, we're moving weeks before Christmas, we'll just make it happen. If it's,
but how does she even know where to find a supermarket that's going to have the things she needs?
I'm sure there's a great expat group in Trinidad Tobago. I bet there is. There'd be a huge expat group there. And what about you, Nikki? You also had a shout-out, didn't you?
I had a shout-out to my Christmas twin. So we asked the question about you know, what are people doing? And Amanda Doyle said it's her first one, I'm guessing in a new location, no plans and no idea what to do. And she's only been there for 4 months, and that's just like us.
Now, I did a little what you would call research and some would call stalking on Amanda Doyle. I think she's in Singapore. And
oh, come on, Amanda. Singapore.
Yes. So maybe she's just moved from there. But if she is, maybe we know some other Christmas orphans in Singapore who might have some good ideas about what to do.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, there's also the other thing about when Christmas Day isn't really Christmas Day at all. So basically when you're in a non-celebrating country. Now, I know here in Qatar there will be no Christmas events in any of the hotels until after our National Day, which is around the 25th of December. So for some people Christmas doesn't even really feel like Christmas because, you know, well, basically it isn't, depending on where you're living. And I thought that was, Susan was really interesting when she said, we've lived in some Muslim countries and my husband's actually worked over Christmas. And that happens here. Christmas Day is a working day here in the Middle East as well. And she said when her husband worked on Christmas Day, the kids were young enough that they bumped Christmas to a later date without them noticing. And I am really impressed with that one because I think I've actually done that with a child's birthday where Greg was travelling on a child's birthday and they were young enough not to know. And so we just sort of said, oh, wow. Oh, it's your birthday, you know, next Tuesday. And we all did the whole birthday thing and they had no idea that, no, it was actually last Saturday, but Dad wasn't here, so we're doing it now. And that happens.
Those children quite obviously did not have an advent calendar with chocolates in it.
Yes.
Because my children start asking in October, when are we getting our advent calendars?
Oh, do they?
Do you have an elf on the shelf in your house?
No, we don't. We haven't done the elf on the shelf. No, we never went down that path. Okay, but there is a shout out I wanted to have too for those that are doing it a bit tougher at Christmas because I think this happens all the time in our expat world is Amanda Settle and her husband, they don't have any children. And obviously we've all seen it, is that often the childless couple are the ones that are presumed that they'll be happy to work on Christmas Day. You know, I've heard that before. I remember this used to happen to my brother-in-law all the time before he had kids. He always worked Christmas because everybody else was married with kids and he wasn't. And it was just assumed that he would do it because he didn't have kids, which just didn't really seem fair. But this year Amanda's hubby's going to be working in a different country, so he'll be in Lagos when she's in Greece. And I just wanted to do a big shout out to Amanda because that is crappy and that, you know, I just know what that Christmas Day is going to be a tough one, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you're in Greece, so we can't feel like really, really sorry for you, Amanda. No. I'm kidding. It's just because I'm in northern Germany. Amanda, we love you and we send you Christmas wishes. Social media, Kirsty, what you got?
Okay, so for me, and I probably imagine half of the planet of people that live in my world, it is all about Oprah Winfrey. So they had Making Oprah was released, I think 2 weeks ago. There's been three episodes.
Oh, ridiculous. There's only three episodes.
I know. I had forgotten how much I absolutely loved Oprah. Like, I just, it was a complete flashback for me of a different time in my life. But I also realised I think I need more Oprah in my life.
Well, yeah, okay. So that's what I was going to ask you. Is it about that it was about that time in your life?
I think a couple of things. You know, so many things. I think number one.
Let's unpack it.
Yes, I'm going to unpack the Oprah thing. Let's do that. I think it is, the realisation that the world has changed so, so much in our expectations of entertainment and what we want, in the fact that the Oprah show just would not, you know, I think they tell you in the podcast that no one will ever reach that sort of viewing again because people just don't watch television in the way that they watched television before. Like, it was pre everything we expected on Facebook.
Yeah, and also that there are more options now. So when there was Oprah, there was kind of like Oprah and Donahue and Dr. Phil or something. Like, that was kind of it.
Yes.
Whereas now Ellen, I think, has the biggest audience, but it's like less than half of what Oprah ever had at one single, at her peak.
Yes, yes, exactly. And it really came to me when they would go back and they'd look at, you know, different parts. So it starts off part one, they look at how Oprah sort of came to be and what that show is about and how it was sort of a little bit more Jerry Springer, not as bad as Jerry Springer, but it was, you know, back in the how do you get a second date and, you know, guys that don't date fat girls or whatever, you know, it was a whole different.
Does my bum look big in these jeans?
Yes, does my bum look big in these jeans? Yeah, a whole different Oprah. But then it sort of takes you through in season two how Oprah morphed and grew and what she grew into. But in episode three, they go back and walk through a particular episode that I can absolutely remember sitting on my couch watching. And it's the one where the black eyed peas come. And it's a surprise to Oprah. She has no idea that they've organised a flash mob and there's 21,000 people in the street and the black eyed peas come out and they have change their song so that it's Oprah focused, and then all of a sudden you see all these people doing a flash mob. And I can remember sitting at home, just, you know, probably with a baby on my lap, because that was my whole Oprah thing, was it was always, you know, you were feeding a baby. But I just remember the pure joy of that moment. Do you know, like, you're sitting watching television and you watch it all unfold, and just Oprah's absolute joy and the black eyed peas and what looked like all of Chicago. And, you know, I remember there were so many times with Oprah where my husband, who wasn't an Oprah watcher, would have to sit through me telling him, oh my God, you wouldn't believe what Oprah said today, or what Oprah did today, or what happened on Oprah today. And oh my God, you know, and I think what it did for me was made me realize I now expect an Oprah moment in my Facebook newsfeed every 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Do you know? I expect to see a video that's going to wow me. I expect to see that joy. I expect to have those moments constantly. Whereas back then, if you got one bit of that in a season, you know, that was amazing.
I thought it was amazing. She's obviously so driven, but also just she was really the driver of the whole thing. So when she got the job on the different station and moved to Chicago and the shows were about, you know, how to get a second date and everything like that, that was kind of when it was in control of the television station. And then she did her own production, and then it moved to more along the lines that she wanted, and she just kept evolving it until it got to be where she really wanted it to be. Like, it was all these ideas she had were just building upon each other.
Yeah.
And you didn't really realize the evolution of the show. Like, it was the black eyed peas, and then it was the, like, you get a car, you get a car, you get a car, that show. But you never realized that it started off with, like, you know, the Dr. Phil, the Jerry Springer moments.
See, I think I did.
No, I didn't. Yeah. I'm obviously slower than you.
No, or maybe it's the time. See, when did you start watching Oprah?
I don't think I ever really watched it.
Yeah.
I think I just knew it was there, okay, and from time to time I would see it.
So this is the difference, right? Here we are. We've just found the ultimate difference. It's I am a fan.
Okay, yeah. Yes. I'm just like an add-on.
One of the favourite things my kids say to me is if I say to them, oh, I didn't know you liked roast potato or whatever, they'll say, and you call yourself a fan?
We recommend it. We both recommend it.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I think, just so many things. So many things about it. I thought it was a great insight into how the show evolved. And but I thought, and I texted you last night about this, is I thought what was very, very interesting that they touched upon was how hard the people worked on the show. And
yes.
I thought it was very interesting because the woman who did the podcast is obviously a huge Oprah fan, and they showed you in that first episode that she had thought that all she was going to get to do was talk to people who'd worked for and around Oprah, and then you hear the moment when she finds out she's going to get to interview her, which is so cute, and she tells her mum, and you know that's all really exciting, and hearing that excitement of her getting to talk to Oprah. When people talked how they worked for 21 hours or 25 hours or you know 27 hours in a row, and that she actually said to Oprah, do you feel conflicted that you had people working those hours when you were giving this message of, you know, living your true life and whatever? I thought Oprah gave a great answer. She didn't fall for it. She didn't, she just said, you know, no. And,
no.
Yeah, yeah. She really did just do a flat sort of no.
But it was interesting when people talked about it being like a cult, you know, not like a cult, but, you know, like it was such a big thing, as you say. Oprah was.
Yes.
I mean, you know, was enormous. And the girl saying that she would go to like functions and people would say, oh, tell me about Oprah because you work with Oprah, you know.
Yeah.
And she would say to mum, I'm so sick of people asking me about Oprah. And her mum would go, oh, you know, they're just interested.
Yes.
And then like 2 years later, her mum was like, if one more person asked me about you working for Oprah.
Yes. And yeah, the whole thing about her weight, like I do remember that episode where she had all the fat on the wagon and wheeled it out to show everybody how much weight she'd lost. And I do remember thinking, wow, you've just set yourself up for this forever. Do you know, this is all people are going to talk about. If you get fat again, people are going to refer to this, and they did. But, yes, so, yes, sorry, I am a massive Oprah fan, so I really probably could write a thesis on this podcast.
It was very good.
What are you listening to?
I listened to Making Oprah, and as I texted you and said, I'm really sad it's over.
Yeah, me too.
Here it was a 3-episode. I was like, oh, I missed that bit. So I'm listening now to something called Offshore, which now I'm pigeonholing myself again in a new genre, which is murder mysteries. So because I listened to Phoebe's Fall and Bowerville, this was suggested to me, and it's about two murders in Hawaii, and they're 80 years apart, and they're murders where white people have killed Hawaiian native people. And I've only listened to sort of part of the half of the first episode, but I'm really drawn in, and it's very interesting, and I think I'm going to like it.
Oh.
And I didn't check how many episodes there were. I should do that so I don't get disappointed at the end.
On to what we've been reading. I have finally finished Big Little Lies. And as I was on the last page of Big Little Lies while my son was massaging my head, I mean, how good is that? He was looking over my shoulder and saw all the book covers of Leanne Moriarty's other books. And there I am on the very last page, and Henry Hot Dog looks over my shoulder and says, oh, Dad's got that book, pointing to one of the other of Leanne Moriarty's books called The Husband's Secret. And I was like, what? Yeah, Dad's got that book. He bought it in the airport in Perth when he was talking to that lady. Number one, which lady? Number two, why does my husband want a book called The Husband's Secret while he's talking to that lady? Anyway, Greg made it very clear that the lady was the woman at the Qantas lounge who he was begging to let them in because he had the kids and only one pass to get in. Anyway, so I now have her next one I'm going to read is The Husband's Secret. I'm also, of course, reading The Disobedient Wife, and I will be chatting to the author, Anika Milicic-Stanley, at the beginning of next week when I have finished the book for next week's podcast.
Well, then I will have to finish the book too so I can send you questions that I think...
Yes, can you send me questions? And also, can everybody send me questions? So if you are reading The Disobedient Wife and you've got any questions for Anika, I can definitely ask her when I talk to her next week. That would be fantastic. The other book I downloaded this morning was something I was talking about last week called The Assassination of Margaret Thatcher, which is a series of short stories by Hilary Mantel. And I just thought, you know, we won't do a book over sort of Christmas, you know, December, January period because people are off on holidays and doing their things.
Except me. I'll just be here in the attic looking out the window.
But I want to read the short story that's called Sorry to Disturb because it's about an expat woman in the Middle East. So, yes, I've just downloaded. I think it was about $12 to download the book on Kindle. What are you reading at the moment other than The Disobedient
Wife? I'm only
Wife?
Reading The Disobedient yes. Wife because I will not let myself read anything else.
Yes, good girl. Yeah.
But next time we have a book, I'm going to make sure it's on Audible because as we discussed before, I'm too precious to actually read. I just like to do things anyway. Whatever.
Do you know, I reckon I would lose focus. That's maybe why I don't do a lot of Audible because I remember doing Holy Cow by Sarah McDonald and I would listen to it and I'd fall asleep and I have to keep rewinding and going back to where I was the night before.
Listen to it while I'm doing that's folding the laundry or vacuuming or walking to language classes.
Yep. Okay. All right. Now I'm watching or have just finished watching The Crown. We finished last night.
Oh, you did?
Yes. Brilliant, wasn't it?
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Did Greg enjoy it too?
Yeah, he did. He loved it. And our youngest loved it. It didn't sustain the interest of the big ones as much. No, they kind of wandered off. There were a couple of things like the episode about the London fog that really interested them because that was a bit of history and it happened. But, yeah, I think, you know, when it was, you know, looking at Margaret and, you know, what was going on with her and her love life and that sort of stuff wasn't them. But I found it all fascinating. How much of it do you think is the real deal?
Well, I read an article about that, like how much is the real deal.
Oh, can you put that in the show notes so we can all...
I will find it and put it in the show notes, yes. So, so there was a thing about the London fog. So it said, you know, did he go to the hospital? Was his assistant killed? All that kind of stuff. And he was not, so that's good to know. It was just added for dramatic effect. but there were bits like that, you know, how true is the story? How faithfully does it follow, you know, the Margaret story particularly because that's a lot of focus in this series. And it was very interesting, so I will put it in there. But, yes, I did because that's what I wanted to know as well. I just think the guy who plays Prince Philip, he just does his mannerisms so well.
Brilliantly.
Like, I just think, wow, that's how I look at it. I just think, wow, that just does look like it could be Prince Philip.
Yes. And they're basically telling you that Prince Philip spent so much of his time off with other people too, aren't they?
Yeah, and I've read that before.
Yes.
I think that's pretty sort of common knowledge. It does show him being quite parent, quite involved with the children, which I hadn't known before or thought of.
I know when you see the grandchildren talking about him, like if you see Harry or William or Beatrice or any of those guys interviewed, they all refer to him as a legend.
Oh, I've never seen them talk about him. I've only seen them talk about her, I think. I have to go and have a look. a bit of a legend. Yes.
Yeah.
But I like how they're including the actual historical things, like when he went to Kenya and said to the guy, nice hat.
Yes. Well, I mean, if they did it, can you remember when he went to Australia and someone said, we should be a republic, and he said, well, go do it or something? Yeah, please do. Go.
I'm sure that's coming.
So is there more to come? Are there more?
I think so. Although I don't know. Sam walked past and said, what are you watching? I said, The Crown. He said, oh, that was one of the most expensive series ever to be made. And I said, how would you even know that? He said, oh, I read something about that. So I don't know. Like, I think that it was expensive, so I think they have to decide how popular it was. But from what I can see, it's pretty popular. I think it probably will get a second season.
Yes. Yeah, but she was brilliant, wasn't she? And I can't remember, because I did see them on Graham Norton, and because that was pre me watching it, I can't remember paying a lot of attention to whether they said it was going to happen again. But he is quite an influential actor, the guy who plays Prince Philip, you know, one of which he was the very last Doctor Who. But yeah, I think to get them back, because I remember them saying in the Graham Norton interview that she had just had a baby when they filmed that, and that she was breastfeeding the whole way through. And this Matt Smith, was saying that she was amazing, because every time they'd sort of, you know, have to stop, she'd go off and breastfeed a child and then come back and keep going. Yeah, can you imagine? No.
Well, I'm watching something very similar.
Oh, tell me.
Not at all. No, I'm watching The West Wing.
Oh.
I went back to watch it from the beginning.
Well,
from the very beginning.
Oh, we could do that over the summer, because we've got them all at the beach house. What a great idea.
And I love The West Wing. I love the writing. I love everything about it. I love the actors. They're just all very clever.
Yeah, yeah. And has it dated too much, or is it still quite relevant?
I was actually thinking that. The stories obviously haven't dated, but there are things like the computers. They're very, like, clunky.
Right.
They do use mobile phones, but they still all have pages. So it's not, you know, and they don't, like, now you would say, you know, the news cycles. So, you know, the press secretary managing the news cycles, she'll say, oh, that's okay. They won't get it till the morning, you know, because something happens.
Yes.
And, like, now that's not even possible. So things like that have changed, but in general, I mean, politics is pretty standard SOP, I think. You know, people have one view or another, and everyone makes a deal to try and get their point across. So, but yes, in terms of that, there was a little bit of dating, and the suits are very, very 90s suits, I think.
Yeah.
They're kind of boxy. But apart from that, I mean, the story, I think, you know, it's still always relevant. Love it.
Okay. All right. Well, I better get off, because I'm about to go through the packing lists of my two children who are flying out of the country this weekend.
Two different locations.
And somebody, of course, has told me when I'm flying out tonight, oh, I need those shoes that you can walk through the water with. And I don't think they mean Crocs.
Sure. Crocs at a pinch, I think, you know. And on that note, just quickly going to drop in Thanksgiving this week. So I'm very thankful, because I just saw a post that I did, and Facebook reminded me of a past post, and it said that when you move somewhere, you pick up the habits and cultures and you try and keep them maybe forever. And in the beginning, it feels weird and strange. Like, in the beginning, I would see all my American Facebook friends putting up thankful posts for, I'm thankful for this, I'm thankful for that. And I was like, oh, that's a bit American for me. But now I think I've lived there long enough so I can have my own thankful post. So this week is Thanksgiving, and I'm thankful that my friend is leaving her family on the day after Thanksgiving and flying to see me for a long weekend.
Oh, that's so nice. Where's she coming from?
She's coming from Atlanta, and she will be coming, and we'll be checking out all the Christmas markets, because the Christmas markets started this week in Hamburg.
Oh, that's so nice.
I know. So you're going to Australia and I feel jealous, but I'm excited because my friend is coming.
Yes. Oh, enjoy. Enjoy. Okay. So once again, everyone, if you could find the time to give us a rating, you really helped us last week. Someone left a rating for us on iTunes, and it immediately bumped us up to the top of the travel charts, which was fantastic. It's that easy. If you could just go and
Just one.
Yeah, just click on a rating or leave a little review, and then it just changes everything because it suddenly bumps us up and then people can see us. Okay, I am going to go and get packing, and I'll talk to you next week from Australia.
Talk to you then.